With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, Boomer. Happy Friday. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Gio. Yeah, happy Friday to you, Al, and Jerry, and everybody out there. And we do have a villain, though. I don't care what you say in the Major League Baseball Players Association versus Major League Baseball owners. And that villain is probably the right guy to be the villain. He should be the one that should be talking because of the amount of players that he represents, the things that he says, the things that he brings to the table on behalf of the player's case. And that is Scott Boras. So I know fans out there aren't big fans of agents, and I get it. Scott Boras is a guy who likes to poach clients from other people, much like Drew Rosenhaus does that in the NFL. But he makes a lot of salient points financially. He obviously has a lot to lose here because he does get a portion of the player's contracts. I know that guys like Trevor Bauer want him out of the mix, but if I were Trevor Bauer and I were a player and I wanted somebody to advocate for me, I would want it to be somebody like Boras, who doesn't really give a crap what you, me, or anybody else thinks about him. All he cares about is whether or not the players are getting their fair share and whether or not the players are going to be protected. So he is now our villain. He is the guy that is going to be the face of the players, and he is the guy that's going to lay out an argument for the fans so the fans understand where, you know, the players are coming from. However, saying all of that, you know, we as fans and we as talk show hosts can read all the arguments. We can see all the situations going on out there. We understand that minor leaguers are starting to get released pretty regularly all across the minor league system right now, that there will most likely, I don't see how they can have any minor league baseball this year, which is going to kill hundreds of cities, you know, across this country because of the argument and the arguments that are going on at the top of the food chain. So this thing right now is toxic. It is it's a hot mess. I still think that the owners can hold out longer than the players, and I also think that the players losing a year of salary is something that they'll never get back. So, yeah. And that's the thing that ultimately, you know, I do believe that the players will end up blinking in some way, shape, or form, and then both sides will spin it so the players don't look so bad if they want to play. If they play, the players will end up probably getting a little bit more money back, not much more money than what's being offered right now. And unfortunately, now you'll have to think about how this really does sour the new CBA that they will be getting ready to negotiate starting next year. You know, they had started some preliminary talks, but all that stuff has been shelved because they're trying to go through everything now and trying to figure out how much the players are going to give up.
I mean, essentially, they've got to agree on two CBAs in two separate years. They've got to agree on this, the rest of this season, and how it goes, and then they got to agree on a new one going forward in the future. And there's no doubt that, you know, right now, these two sides are just, they don't like one another. I mean, it's become personal, and it's become personal within current players. It's also become personal with former players and current players publicly, as we're seeing that now on Twitter. I mean, it's every single faction has been fighting one another on social media, and a lot of it has to do with Trevor Bauer, as Trevor Bauer and Kyle Loesch, who's a former retired pitcher, go back and forth. And then that even became personal, as Kyle Loesch was saying that, oh, the reason that you don't like Scott Boras is because your agent, who you date, is someone who doesn't like him or whatever. It's just insanity. I mean, it's insanity how angry people have gotten with this, and I understand why, but it just plays out publicly, and we are all consuming this every single day. You even got an okay boomer from Trevor Bauer to Kyle Loesch because Kyle Loesch said us retired players are looking at you guys and worrying that you're going to ruin everything that we built. I mean, that's what it's gotten come down to here with player and player infighting and even retired player and current player fighting.
Hey, Mark Teixeira was hammered a couple weeks ago when he came out and said what he said.
Yeah.
And now he has kind of moved off a little bit of that stance and kind of talking about he doesn't want the owners to break the union and all that other stuff, because I don't know if he was listening to us or because we were talking about dividing and conquering, and that's exactly what the owners are trying to do here. Take the lesser known players, the lower paid players, make them more whole as compared to the Mike Trouts and the Bryce Harpers of the world. So, you know, that's part of the negotiating ploy for sure. But the one thing I will say, and again, I go back to what I was talking about when I was an NFLPA rep, it's kind of like the opposite what's happening here. The owners back in 1987 went to the higher profile players, the players that were making a little bit more money, not a lot of money, because remember, there was only a couple of us making over $1 million in 1987 per year, per season. And a couple of those guys ended up going back and crossing the picket line. And it really was hard to keep your team together and make them believe that staying out was going to have a profound effect on us moving forward. I think it has. I think it took a while for us to get there, and I still think that there's more room to grow for the NFLPA. But at the end of the day, you know, it's when you have players fighting with each other, and, you know, in our case, we had players crossing the picket line, and names like Montana and Lawrence Taylor, you know, you have your lower-end guys going, wait. If they're going back to get their money and they're making more money than I am, then what the hell am I doing sitting out here trying to make it better for everybody when, you know, in fact, we can't do that. So the owners here are trying to do it the other way. They're trying to tell the rank and file, much like the NFL owners have come to learn, tell the rank and file this is what you're going to get. Most of the rank and file players aren't even engaged in any of these contract negotiations or even understand what the hell is going to happen to them in the future, you know, when they finally do decide to retire. But I think Major League Baseball Players Association has always been the strongest, will always remain the strongest. And I think, you know, their advocate right now, for them anyway, is Scott Boras. And
yeah,
he makes
so,
very, very good points.
Yeah, that's right. Now, if Scott Boras is going to be the advocate for the players throughout this, then a deal will not get done. I need to know who that voice is for the players that's not the extreme, because Scott Boras is the extreme. Scott Boras says, we are not going to take a penny less than that other agreement. He's been like that his entire career, and that's why he's turned a lot of people off, but that's why the best players, the highest paid players flock to him, because he knows, or they know, that he's going to get every cent out of that contract, and he's going to do that by any means necessary. But is there another person of influence that a majority of the players will listen to that maybe aren't those top Scott Boras clients that'll say, we have to play. This may do irreparable damage to our reputations going forward. This would be the worst thing for us. This is important that we have to come up with a deal. Yeah, does it suck? Yes, of course it does. I don't want to give everything to the owners. We have to find a little bit more of a middle ground, but we can't listen to Scott Boras and say that we're only playing for the prorated salaries. We have to figure this out because it's more important than just our own personal financial situations for a single year. We've got to get back on the field for bigger reasons.
Yeah, you know, but there's a term that the union and Scott Boras and a lot of the players are being, you know, are talking about. And that term is non-baseball revenue, you know, and, you know, what falls under that category and how much money exactly is that? And that's what the players are trying to pierce. That's what the players are trying to figure out. You know, I think in the court of public opinion, the players most likely are probably losing the battle. But when
let's do another poll today. Why not? We had
poll. Because I know what the owners are doing. The owners are saying, you know, hey, Mike Trout or Gerrit Cole, for instance. Yeah. No, you think you're going to be making $18 million. That's what he's thinking. He's thinking that we made a deal in March, and if we come back and play an 82-game season, I am going to make half of my salary. I'm going to make $18 million. When in reality, what the owners are asking him to do is to take another pay cut from that $18 million to cover that 82-game season down to $9 million. And then the argument publicly becomes, do you want to make $9 million a year or do you want to make nothing? You know, and how can you, under these financial circumstances for many of Americans who are out of work and on public assistance, how can you turn down $9 million a year? So that is the argument, that is the public argument that is being placed out there by the ownership. And in the meantime, ownership is also furloughing major leaguers or cutting major leaguers. They're furloughing employees at different levels of their organizations. And all of this other stuff is going out, and the players are looking like the bad guys.
Yeah, I wonder how much of the Met fan that would vote in our poll would be influenced by the fact that they can't stand the Wilpons and believe they are the cheapest people on the planet, right? Like, so to have a Mets fan side with owners ever is something that is rare. Like,
yeah,
they may
happen,
look at they may look at this like, well, we know how cheap our ownership group is, and we know how cheap, like, look at the A's and look at teams like the Pirates, and these people are nickel and diming these players, and I'm never going to side with them, and the players should get what there could be some of that. So, and where I agree with you that most of the stuff that I've heard, because I mean our audience is a very blue collar audience that does not want to hear it from the Major League Baseball players who are getting their $30 million cut down to $7 or $8 million, and it just doesn't make sense to them. I do think there's a faction of people out there that are looking at the owners like, here we go again with you guys. This is unbelievable, the money you rake in, and you're keeping it all for yourself. I mean, this is pathetic. There are going to be some of those people, and it might even be close to a majority. So I'm very curious to see what the poll says.
The other argument from Scott Boras is that the last 3 years have been, or maybe 4 or 5 years even, have been record-setting in terms of the amount of money that each of these teams has made. And, you know, he is saying that, you know, look, man, you guys have, you know, didn't come to us and say, hey, here's more money for you because of the popularity of the sport and the amount of money that you have made. You basically kept that for yourselves above and beyond whatever our agreement is. So now you come to us only in the midst of a pandemic, and because, you know, you're losing half your season, that you want us to share that burden. In other words, we didn't share the benefits of the popularity of the sport as much as we would have liked, especially a couple of years ago, if you remember when free agency basically stalled and they had to put a free agency camp together because players weren't able to garner any of the contracts that they thought were coming their way.
Well, certain players in certain age groups were not getting deals that they used to get.
And the reason for that is because of the analytics dudes from MIT, Yale, and Harvard that basically are taking over front offices of these teams.
Yeah, but I didn't necessarily disagree with some of these older players getting, you know, these massive deals. It just wasn't working out. I mean, it wasn't so much like the analytics of baseball. A lot of it was looking at some of these contracts that were getting handed out and saying, this just isn't worth it for teams. There were so many examples of guys who were underperforming once they signed a big deal after whatever age was determined, you know, in the early 30s. So I didn't think that was the worst thing ever that teams were doing that. I mean, it was smarter business. I mean, how many times did we sit around and talk about how we didn't want to bring in it with any team, whether it's the Knicks or the Rangers, you know, an aging superstar and sign him to some ridiculous, you know, 5, 6, 7 year deal. I mean, taking on the Robbie Cano deal was like a punch in the gut. I hated that thing. And that wasn't, the Mets didn't even need to pay like half of what that was from the beginning, but just the tail end of it. It was just a horrible contract. Contracts like that should not be handed out any longer.
Well, I agree, but that's also at the base of all of this stuff, because things have started to change, and a lot of that has to do with analytics, I believe. But when you take a look at the Yankee payroll, for instance, the top, I think it's probably 10 guys, starting with Brett Gardner, he makes $10 million this coming season. DJ LeMahieu, $12 million. James Paxton, $12.5 million. Zach Britton, $13 million. J.A. Happ, $17 million. Aroldis Chapman, $17.2 million. Masahiro Tanaka, $23 million. Stanton, $26 million. And then Gerrit Cole, $36 million. All of those guys are being asked to take significant, significant pay cuts. And then, you know, basically they are being pitted against their teammates. Chad Green, Luis Sessa, Jordan Montgomery, Jonathan Holder, Gleyber Torres, Luke Voigt, Miguel Andujar, Mike Tauchman, Tyler Wade, Jonathan Loaisiga, Mike Ford, and Kyle Higashioka.
Come on, you could do it without my help.
Higashioka.
No,
or whatever.
It's not it. It's Higashioka.
Yeah. Right. So, and then, of course, you have Severino and Hicks, who are both on injured reserve. So if you just take a look at the Yankees payroll, you see there are a lot of guys on this team that make less than $1 million. And these are the guys that basically the owners are trying to say, hey, we're going to make you guys mostly whole, but we're going to screw your teammates. And I would say that if I were the Jordan Montgomerys of the world, the Miguel Andujars of the world, who I think is a great baseball player, the Gleyber Torres is a great baseball player, I would say, you know what? I'm with the union. I'm with the guys that are making the big money, because one day my hopes and dreams are to be that guy making that kind of money.
Yeah.
I will not. This would just be me talking about being a part of this team. I would not go against my teammates that are making the big money, because one day I hope to be one of those guys.
Yeah, but this is where I think this is mixing too much what the future is and what the present is. I mean, it seems like the players feel like if they give in now to this pandemic season proposal, that all of a sudden in the future, everything that they want is going to be ripped away from them. And I don't see the evidence of that. I don't think this is one of those you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube things with the players. I mean, I understand that negotiations, when you go into it with a personal anger towards the other side, don't normally go well in the beginning. And that's something they're going to have to deal with the new CBA. But why is it that the players feel like if they negotiate here and give the owners what they want, that the next time around, when we're talking about a totally different world than what we're living in right now, that that next CBA is also going to get stuff taken away from them?
Well, you know, I don't know. That's always the thought in the back of the mind of the players' associations, that things are going to be taken away from us in some way, shape, or form. And it may not be as clear as we think it is, but when we finally get the thing signed and put it in place, now all of a sudden things are missing. But, you know, what's interesting about all of this, so I gave you those contract numbers for a number of these players, and starting with Brett Gardner, I would like to think that all of those players have had great relationships with the owner that they play for, the Yankees, the Steinbrenner family. Mm-hmm. Because they are all getting paid extremely well. So I don't know, like if you're, I don't know, Tanaka, let's say you're Tanaka. You've been here since the beginning of your career when you came over from Japan. Are you upset with Yankee ownership? Have they not done right by you?
Yeah, there's no way. I can't see him being upset.
No, I mean, but that's the point. Like, it's a weird deal. Like, you have guys, like, I'm sure Gerrit Cole, when he signed his $36 million a year contract, I'm sure he was excited as hell to think about putting on the Yankee uniform. And I'm sure that Lon and Randy and everybody over there rolled out the red carpet for him. It's going to be great. You're going to be a Yankee. You're going to be the guy that we need to take us to the next level, blah, blah, blah. You know, all of that stuff. And you know damn well he's not upset with the Yankees.
No, I mean, Tanaka's one of those guys that I feel like if he would go out there and play for $0. Like, Masahiro Tanaka's the guy that would play for the honor of the game. Like, I'll go out there, I don't need anything. Like, I'm just going to go out there and pitch. Like, that would be his personality. But there's a lot of guys who do not think that way. And there's also a lot of players who don't love their ownership group.
Right, well, this was the big thing back in 87 for us, because Cincinnati happened to be one of the cheaper teams. And, you know, we had bare bones practice facilities. You know, it was hard to get an extra T-shirt for practice, believe it or not. You know, could we ask for a jersey so we could give it to a charity? No. I mean, things like that were just, like, impossible to come by. Meanwhile, you're playing for Eddie DeBartolo out in San Francisco, and he's handing you, you know, envelopes of cash after games. I mean, who wouldn't love to go play for that guy? Or, you know, in today's world, play for Jerry Jones, who seems like he's got more ex-Cowboys on the payroll than he does actual Cowboys on the payroll.
Oh, that's the dream. Isn't that the dream? Like, to be a guy who has success for an organization like that, and especially, like, wins a championship, and not only are you beloved by the owners forever, and you're welcome back, and you can go to the box, and whatever it is. But then on top of that, wherever you go in that city, you are a hero. I mean, that is the dream.
Those guys are getting appearances like $25,000 to $50,000 an appearance just to show up during the football season. They don't even play anymore.
Yeah, like former Cowboys, former Packers, former Steelers, like places like that, I think. Well, because you're just a hero in those cities.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know what? You can be in Cincinnati, but, you know, I don't, you know, the Rooneys, honestly, the Rooneys run their team much like the Bengals run
frugal.
Their team, too.
Well,
they're the same
they're
thing.
Frugal.
The same thing. Same types of owners.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, the spendthrift owners are the guys like, you know, Jerry Jones is one of those high profile guys.
Yeah,
you know, there's not a lot of them in the NFL. There's more of them in some other sports. But, you know, even Bob Kraft, you know, watches what he spends because Bill Belichick tells him what to spend.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he may be a high profile guy, but, you know, he's not overspending for people. And you don't see them, you know, running out there giving, you know, 7-year deals for $400 million.
Well, also, but Jerry Jones also spends on stuff that isn't cap related, right? Like he's going to have the best stadium and the best practice facility and the best this and the best that and the biggest
right.
yacht and the whatever. So that's where he likes to spend as well. So it doesn't necessarily affect the cap, but he's also spent a lot on the team that is affecting the cap as well.
He has invested in the Cowboy brand.
Yeah,
just like
sure.
the Steinbrenner family has invested in the Yankee brand. That's why the Cowboys and the Yankees came together. And they formed basically a management or stadium management company together. So it makes total sense because you're investing in two of the most iconic names in all of sports in the world. And you're making so much money away from the game that the players cannot pierce.
Settle down just a little bit.
Yeah, because of that popularity. And they're smart. That's the way I would do it. I mean, if I were on that side and I had the Yankee brand and I had the Cowboy brand, hell, damn straight, I'd be out there selling it like a crazy person.
Oh.
And I would be trying to be doing it in every different way that I didn't have to share it with the players.
If I worked for one of those teams, I would wear something with their logo on it every single day. Like, I'd have, like, the polo with the logo on it. I'd be walking around with the actual football pants of the Cowboys. Like, if I worked for one of those teams and had to, like...
yeah.
be like a brand ambassador for one of the, I would just constantly be wearing the stuff. I'd be wearing like 10-gallon hat. I'd be wearing Spurs if I worked for the Cowboys.
Kind of like Jerry Recco does during the football season. He gets away from it a little bit.
Yeah.
But during the football season, you know, he tends to wear it a lot.
Yeah, I always loved that, man. For the short amount of time that I worked with Pitt football, all the stuff that you would get.
Yes.
With Rutgers, he knows now. Like, he's just like in Columbia. Like, you just, all that stuff, like, for some reason, when you get it from the team, like, it's even more special than buying it on your own.
I want me some glory hole action.
That's what I'm talking about.
I'd never take it off. Every day I had some of it. I still have some of it. It's like almost 10 years ago now, but I still have some of the stuff.
And you guys think that the athletes have this mindset, if it's free, it's me. I think the NARPs of the world are even worse when it comes to that.
Yeah, probably.
Because you're not used to getting stuff.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. Like Jerry, I see he's got so many great Rutgers things. Like, he just wears them in a rotation, and it's all like, you put that thing on, and somebody from Rutgers gave you this thing because you work for them. You like, you wear it with a sense of pride that you wouldn't wear a normal shirt with.
It's also the fact that it's quality stuff. Like, Columbia was Under Armour, Rutgers is now Adidas, and Boomer Esiason Foundation is Under Armour. Like, it is great. Great clothes. It's more than that. And plus, you're repping the organization. Why not?
Right, Right. Big walk-in commercial. Yeah, the closest I've gotten since leaving Pitt football is the Boomer Esiason Foundation stuff. Like, when that stuff comes, that's sort of similar. Like, when I get the, especially the things for, like, the running stuff and the biking stuff.
The bike debris, the You Cannot Fail stuff, all of those different programs that we have. You know, the amazing thing is just how much stuff that we get from WFAN. It's just, it's unbelievable. So much stuff. You know, brand ambassadors like us, boy, I'll tell you what, you know, the free stuff that comes our way is unbelievable.
Man, oh, man.
I mean, I walked into the FAN store over there, JFK. They had no idea who I was.
Yeah, well, like, it's not really an FAN
store.
What
do you want? What are you doing? I don't know. Is there anything in there with my picture on it? No. Okay. I'll see you later.
That's just a bunch of crappy Mets, Yankees, Jets, Giants shirts that are hanging in there. Has nothing
it's
to do with
it's basically like
WFAN.
A sports store, but they're using WFAN as the moniker as opposed to, say, like Modell's or something.
Is the radio station at least getting cash for that?
I don't know what the radio station's doing.
That's one of the weirdest deals of all time. The WFAN store in the JetBlue terminal at JFK is one of the strangest things on earth.
Guy gets off a flight from South Africa. Oh, I was always looking for the FAN store.
But like inside of the FAN store, there's nothing FAN.
Nope.
I mean, it's
what
like,
do you
it's
think
like,
that is? Like, what can we drill down? Can somebody drill down and find out exactly what type of deal that is?
Well, you know, it happened before Entercom owned us. It was before that, so that deal probably has expired, and no one's even looked into it. It's just always going to be the FAN store,
and nobody's making anything off of it.
Right.
Somebody, that has to be a licensing deal, doesn't it? Doesn't a name have to be a licensing deal?
Well, maybe the architect could look into that.
I mean, if you think about how little money is spent on promotion, like there's no more advertisements on TV, there's no more billboards anymore, there's nothing on a bus, like there's just no...
The only thing we have is our softball team.
But basically, yes.
And we do that, and I buy the uniforms.
But like to think that the one thing that FAN does to promote the brand is have a store...
And you quit, the team.
Oh, here we go. Jeez.
I mean, I was trying to promote the team, and you said, I don't want to play anymore.
Yeah, I could see the dead horse behind you that you're starting to beat. It's right next to your box of tissues. But the one thing that they decided on was the JetBlue terminal. The one thing. Bizarre.
Who decided?
I don't know. I don't know who it was.
Can we find out, is there any way that we can find out who runs that store, what that store is about, why that store even exists? Does anybody even know?
I don't think so.
We need like a Michael Jordan-type documentary on this.
30 for 30
Yeah, like a 30 for 30, yeah.
And by the way, speaking of that, did you see where Clyde Drexler now came out and says he hates the Michael Jordan that he saw in Last Dance?
Yeah, I didn't see what context that was in, though. I don't know if he like laughed through it, like, oh, that Michael Jordan, that tough competitor, I couldn't stand that guy, or he really hates his guts. I think he was
talking about the Michael Jordan that was actually sitting in the seat. Not the Michael Jordan that was playing, the Michael Jordan that was actually, you know, being interviewed throughout the Last Dance.
That's looking at the iPad and mocking people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's just keep talking. Why don't we just keep? It's almost 6:30. Let's just take this right to 7 o'clock and screw everything up. Hey, Eddie, if we just talk all the way till 9, can we take the 9 o'clock hour off? Is that possible?
Can we replay it like some other people do around here?
You probably actually you could. I don't know how that would go over.
Probably not well.
You might have an hour's worth of live read, so you'd be sitting there anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. That could be a new gimmick for us. An hour of commercials from 9 to 10. Straight commercials. All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan, CBS Sports Network, and radio.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend
or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.